Joshua chapter 3. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Acacia Grove and came to the Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they crossed over. So it was, after 3 days, that the officers went through the camp. And they commanded the people, saying, When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. And Joshua said to the people, Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Then Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, Take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. You shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, When you have come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan. So Joshua said to the children of Israel, Come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Hivites, and the Perizzites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. Now therefore, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man from every tribe. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. So it was when the people set out from their camp to cross over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people. And as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped in the edge of the water, where the Jordan overflows all its banks during the whole time of harvest, that the waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zaratan. So the waters that went down into the sea of Arabah, the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people crossed over opposite Jericho. Then the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan. Chapter 4. And it came to pass when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, Take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight. Then Joshua called the 12 men, whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe, and Joshua said to them, Cross over before the Ark of the Lord your God, into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, What do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them, that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be for a memorial to the children of Israel forever. Verse 8. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the midst of the Jordan, as the Lord had spoken to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the ark of the covenant stood, and they are there to this day. Verse 10. So the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua, and the people hurried and crossed over. Then it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over, that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people. And the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel, as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. Verse 15. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, Command the priests who bear the ark of the testimony to come up from the Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, Come up from the Jordan. And it came to pass, when the priests who bore the ark of the covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. Verse 19. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. Then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, What are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. As the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, and that you may fear the Lord your God forever.
Thank you, David, for reading that. I combined chapter 3 and chapter 4 because they are part of the same story. It's one of the subject matters we'll be talking about today. There's a lot of symbolism going on here in chapter 3 and chapter 4, which we're going to be talking about. That's why I combined them. First of all, do you have any questions? And it catches your eye from this part. Yes, Ellie.
Well, later in Isaiah, I think it talks about when God brings all of Israel back to the land, that it will be, the exodus will be so big, when they think of the word exodus, they won't think of Moses, they'll think of them. So what water is going to dry up for us to go across?
We're going to talk about that. You don't have to write it down. I will forget the question otherwise, so give me a moment here. Any other questions? Something catches your eye. It's like, what's that for? There's another question.
It's
all
yes. 10th day.
10th day?
The first month. And where they came. And where they came.
Yeah.
Also, something that stuck out to me is that the priest had to go before the waters broke.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you've ever canoed a river at flood stage. I know I have. sticking anything into a river at flood stage, it's not going to happen. So to try to think that people actually dammed it physically at flood stage, forget it. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably was a big testimony to everybody at the upstream of the river as to what was going on, because it was
downstream, there's no water.
Yeah, we're going to talk specifically about the downstream, which connects to Ellie's question regarding what water is going to dry out. They're going to be tied together. Okay, so first of all, we just read the story. It's a very fascinating story. It's kind of exciting at times, because like, ooh, wow, it'd be cool to be there. I mean, who wouldn't want to see that? there are a couple of connections. Couple. There are quite a few, actually, which we're going to do most of the remaining half an hour. First of all, connections of what events or what things are mentioned here in chapter 3 and chapter 4 that connect to the Messiah later on. These particular two chapters have very large amount of information. Remember, these guys are entering into the promised land, which all of us are desiring to do as well. There's a lot of symbolism going on. So we're going to explore a few of them.
The first day of the 10th month is also when they did their Passover lamb back in Egypt.
That was when they selected it. And they selected the 10th day of the month, which is one of the reasons why this day was chosen by God. We'll get into that as well. So first of all, verse 2 of chapter 3. They journey for 3 days. At the end of the third day, they go in, they cross the river. So we'll just write that one down. And we see connections to the 10th day of the month. And my little eraser here, which I've lost. Oh, there it is. I'll give you a slight hint. Actually, I'll just tell you. They journey for 3 days. The end of the third day, the marshals go running through the whole camp. They tell you, his soldiers, telling everybody, get ready, get ready, get ready for what? The fourth day. What's going on here? You have 3 days, and what do they do on the fourth day? They cross it. And actually, when you calculate it out, because of the time which Joshua first rose early that morning, it's 3.5 days. Resurrection. Mind you, everything in these two chapters are going to be pointing to the Messiah one way or another. All you do is just look at them. So, 3.5 days is what they actually consume. And it tells you that by pointing out Joshua rose early in the morning the first day. So it's day one. Guy goes all the way through. They reach their place. 3 days have passed. Their marshals show up, or their men show up, say, tomorrow you're crossing through. Now you could choose to read this as they get there and they camp there for 3 solid days waiting. Not commonly believed, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Most people don't argue that because of the date when Moses died. You'd have 3 extra days they need to invent in the month, which doesn't work. So they know it was 3 days. They believe, commonly believe, it's 3.5 days before they cross it. They cross it over on the 10th day, which is the day Messiah, or the Lamb, is chosen, which we already talked about. Verse 3. Read it here correctly. It says, here are the people say, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem, your God, and the Kohanim, the Levites, carrying it, then you shall move from your place and follow it. What does that sound like? Symbolism here. What does it sound like? The Ark of the Covenant and the priests who are carrying it, and you're following it, which is completely abnormal, by the way. We already read through the Torah that any time the Ark is supposed to move, there are 6 tribes in front, there are 6 tribes in back. The ark is never leading. But in this case, it's leading. This will become a little more clear as we go through some of the other symbols, which will explain what this is supposed to mean. So, 3 verse 3. Ark is leading. Verse 4. How far away do they have? Actually, take this. It's actually the end of verse 3. How far away are they supposed to stay away from this thing? 2,000 cubits. What is a cubit?
About
18 inches. What is it biblically defined as? It doesn't define it as 18 inches. Span of a man's arm. Span of a man. Yeah, well, yeah, that will accept. It's a span of a man. Counting of a man. Approximately 2,000 cubits. Why? What's the significance of 2,000 cubits? Why couldn't they do 1,500? Why not 3,000? What's the deal with 2,000 cubits?
Is this the midpoint between...
Go ahead.
Creation and when... the next 2,000 years, is that...
Not quite. This is actually a little bit later than that. The midpoint would be closer to Abraham's life was that break. And the next break is the Messiah. But you're on the right track.
Yeah. The 2,000
years. The 2,000 years. What is it if you're supposed to be following this ark, which the priests have, and this is unusual, and you say 2,000 cubits behind? What are the reasons that the marshals give? Why did they? Why?
Because they
would
know.
They don't know the way. They've never been this way before. This is unusual. Never crossed over this way before. No one has, actually. Unless you're on a boat. How many years... Measure of a man, by the way. A cubit is a measure of a human being. God's arm does not measure 18 inches. An angel's arm does not measure 18 inches. A man's arm does. How many years was it when the Messiah died before anybody else was to follow him? After he died.
2,000
years. The Ark of the Covenant, this particular scenario right here, is symbolic of the Messiah himself.
He came on the fourth day.
Yes, he did come on the fourth day.
It's like 2,000 years left.
He showed up on the fourth day, the 4,000th year the Messiah showed up. This is also key, which is the 3.5, which you mentioned in verse 2 and 3. I'm going to mark that too. As a secondary. Everybody's supposed to follow 2,000 cubits behind because Messiah is leading you the way.
Because we never did this before.
We never did this before. This is something new to us. Next verse. Everything in chapter 3 and 4 points to the Messiah in one way or another. It's quite interesting to see. Why would this be, by the way? We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Why would all these things point to the Messiah? What is it about Joshua?
His name.
The symbolic of the Messiah is his name. This was God's intention. So, next verse. We're going to verse 7. So, 3 verse 7. What's God's words? I'm going to rephrase that word, the English word.
Yes, me
do. Lift you. Oops, if I can spell. Up. This day I will lift you up. I will elevate you. I will exalt you. Now Joshua does not tell anybody else by this, by the way. Notice what his words were later on? He tells people, this is all God. This is all God. This is all God. God's doing this so you will give honor to him. He never says it's because God wants to exalt me up in your eyes. Of course, it would be very conceited to do so. But what was Messiah's job?
Come here and hear the words of the Lord.
Speak the word of the Father.
Speak the word of the Father. To tell you about the kingdom and to tell you about the Father. That was the Messiah's job. He pointed you to the Father. And what's Joshua doing here? If he's symbolic of the Messiah, bringing people into the promised land, he's still pointing you to the to God, saying, this is the way. It's a very unusual way. It's a way that no one's ever gone before. Through the middle of a Jordan River. No, they have bridges. There's actually a bridge, according to what theory, there's a bridge in the city just north, which I mentioned at Adam, I think it's how you, Adam, yeah, the town. They have a city there. They have a bridge that crosses. They could have just gone up there and crossed over, but why? This is a new way. A way that's never been done before. This is unusual. Next verse 8. Standing in the midst of the Jordan River. I like this verse. It's a little different. What happened when all the Israelites crossed the Red Sea? What was it symbolic of?
Baptism.
So, all those people are dead, though. The new people have never been baptized. Not one of them has. Well, maybe a few that were in their 20s or younger as children crossing. That was 40 years ago. And by the way, they were none of them were circumcised, which we'll talk about that next week. These guys have never been baptized. So they get to stand in the midst of the Jordan. They're all going to cross over. And who is showing them the way to this baptism? The Messiah, the Ark of the Covenant. And they're standing right in the midst saying, follow me. I can't spell baptism. Forgive me. Ism. I don't know how to spell it. I'm a horrible, horrible English speller, so I apologize for that.
Let alone Dutch or English.
Nah, that's true.
You're an engineer like me. Yeah.
Verse 9. What does Joshua tell the people? Come here. Actually, verbally, come here and see. See this, hear this, listen to what I'm saying. What does the Messiah do? Same thing. Come and see. Actually, I should say hear more accurately. Verse 10, he gives glory to God for this miracle. What did the Messiah do when he was raised up, literally killed? Gave glory to God for what this was going to bring all these people through. They're going to bring them to their promised land. Everything here points to the Messiah in one way or another. It's actually just interesting to look at. And they're all watching in verse 11. Now all of them, meaning all the people of Israel who are crossing this thing, are watching this spectacle. They're watching the Messiah. They're watching the Ark of the Covenant, who is leading them their way. We all look to the Messiah. When we are told, draw near, to draw toward God, we look toward the Messiah. Just like all those people are looking toward the Messiah. Verse 11, they see their salvation. Their entering, their method, their procedure, their gateway, or the path, however you wish to look at it, that's what they're looking at, that's what they're seeing, that's what they're doing. Verse 12. I realize this is very tedious at times, but we're almost done. So, verse 12. 12 men, actually 12 rocks, it's soon to be rocks, but they're 12 men.
Big boulders.
Very big.
Yeah.
What does this seem like? This is kind of odd. What are they doing here? What is it with these 12 men? What does it sound like to you? Thanks, Messiah. What does 12 men sound like to you?
Disciples.
Thank you.
If I could spell right,
that wouldn't look like decibels, but I don't know how to spell disciples. And no, I'm not that loud. Well, I don't think I am. Verse 14. We'll come back to the decibels later. Land. What are they commanded to do? Just write it down. Leaving their tents, they packed them up, leaving their temporary dwelling places, going to God's promised land, which is a permanent dwelling place. Each of us has the same thing. Here on earth, we're temporary. By definition, it is. We're going to the promised land. These people are symbolically doing what all of us are going to wind up having to do too. In order to get to this promised land, you leave your temporary dwelling behind and you move in. So I've written here tents to promised land. Verse 16, the column of water. What in particular, this is what going to address Ellie's question partly, hopefully mostly. Column of water, what did it do? What are the results of this massive column on by the way, it's on their right because they're all crossing from east to left to west. So on the right-hand side, they can see it for presumably miles. It takes a long time to mass this many people across a river, so it's going to slowly build up. What did that column of water effectively do downstream?
Cut off all the water to the people downstream.
What's downstream? Well, I erased my map, but it was there.
The Dead Sea.
The Dead Sea. It cut off the water of the Dead Sea.
Was the Dead Sea at that day?
Yes, it was. It was Dead Sea from Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah,
that
Sodom
point.
Gomorrah.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm
yeah. So 3:16. Cut off Dead Sea. What does that mean? How is that point to the Messiah?
No more dead.
It gives you the answer in Ezekiel, which we are obviously not there yet. But the Dead Sea is symbolic of something. What's the Dead Sea symbolic of in Ezekiel's prophecy regarding the temple? It's symbolic of the rest of the world. People that are going to be washed away in Ezekiel's temple.
Into
the marshes, into be disposed of. The Dead Sea is symbolic of the earth. It's a salt sea. For a reason, we're called the salt of the earth. It's the sea of mankind is cut off while they're crossing. In order to get into, this is a temporary thing. This is exciting to me at least. They're crossing it while the people are going into the promised land to get there. The Dead Sea is cut off. This Jordan River is piling high. Does the Dead Sea go away? Well, no, it's still there.
It just waits.
It just waits. It has to wait for its lifeblood. The Jordan River is the life of the Dead Sea, by the way, if those of you who were not aware of that. If the Jordan River stops, the Dead Sea goes away. So temporarily, the Dead Sea stopped. It stopped growing. It started to recede. It didn't go away. It was just, I have nothing that keeps me alive anymore. Until the people are in the Promised Land, and then it's brought to life again. So I'm going to put the Dead Sea as equals man referring to Gentiles. Now, don't take that negatively. It's just the reality is, God's chosen people get to go in first. Now, what are his chosen people? Those who are following him. In Joshua's time, it's not just his Israelites that are amongst his group. There are those who chose to follow him. Yes, Bill?
Would that be like after the Jordan goes back down to the Dead Sea, would that be like while the Dead Sea's waiting, would that be like the 1,000-year time period?
That's actually, I hadn't actually thought about that. One could argue that. That the Dead Sea's waiting period is 1,000 years, because, you could say that. It could also mean, which I'm not going to say it's right or wrong, because we're looking at symbols here. This is not a definite answer, yes or no. It could also mean that they have to wait because the whole world is in suspension, in anticipation of this event, of crossing into the Promised Land.
Waiting for what?
It's waiting for its way, its direction. It can't go anywhere. It has to wait. So you could argue these symbols quite well, one way or the other. It could be that's what the symbolism of the wait is, because the whole world is waiting as they watch this spectacle, which we're all anticipating to see. So I can't say yes or no to you, but that's a really good point. It could be the 1,000-year wait that they have to wait. Okay, we're going into chapter 4 a little bit here. What do you notice here about the chapter 4? By the way, the Ark of the Covenant in chapter 4 is still there. So the guys are still standing there in the Jordan River right in the middle of it, while the whole nation's already gone through. Some will argue whether or not Joshua actually went through yet or not, but you know, I'm not going to argue that point. Because they say how much faith did it take for the 12 men to go back if no one's on the other side of the Jordan anymore. But what are these 12 men doing? No one knows. One of these things that they do was commanded by Moses and God. One of the things that Joshua does was not commanded by either. He just did it on his own. We'll explain why he did it on his own in a minute. So, on chapter 4, we have... where is it? Oh, what did the 12 men do? I just asked that question. What was their task?
Pick up a rock.
Pick up a rock. How big was the rock? A big rock.
Carry
a shoulder. It's a big rock.
So it wasn't a weakling.
No, it was not. And these were not young little boys or old men. These were actually... relatively stout people in order to carry this rock. Now, each one only carried one. It wasn't like, oh, help, you help me with mine, I'll help you with yours kind of thing. They each carried one. It was one very large rock. So we'll write that down, too. Because it's kind of important, and we'll explain that in a minute. I don't recall what verse it was. I forgot to write that verse number down.
Realistically, it would be probably a 2 or 3 head rock, as they're known.
Three head. I'm not familiar with that term, head.
The head is like the size of a man's
head. Oh, it has a man's head. That's probably true. So, yeah, it makes sense.
Anything bigger than 2 head rock.
Would be hard to hold on your shoulder.
Hard to pick up and put on your shoulder. Three.
Good point. I'm going to stop writing the verse because I don't have it written down. So, but I know it's in chapter 4. We just read it. They picked up a rock. You know the verse number?
4.
Thank you.
Actually, verse 3 is the one that talks about the stones. Take for yourselves 12 stones.
Okay.
So it's actually verse 3.
Oh, okay. All right, so we'll write down 3. Thank you. Picked up rocks. Where did they pick them up from?
Jordan.
Very specifically, where did they pick them up from? In the Jordan. Where the priests are standing. This is key. These guys we already mentioned before, 12 disciples, or Ezra decibels, they're 12 people whose job is to pick up the rocks from underneath the Ark of the Covenant. They're a foundation. They're right in the foundation. They're at the foundation of the Ark of the Covenant. We look at it as, I believe it's called what the temple's built on, the foundation of the apostles, the 12 stones. Same symbolism here. The same story. At the foundation of the Messiah. He is literally right above them as they pick up these rocks. They're fairly good size, as Dave pointed out, 2 to 3 head rocks. Let's see. Stones. Foundation. One for each apostle. One for each tribe. They're one and the same for the most part, actually. The symbolism is about the same. What happened next?
Cross over and they stack them up.
Not quite yet. There's something else that happens. What did Joshua do?
He went out and put stones where the priest did.
He grabbed stones from the land
put
them right underneath where the ark was. We'll discuss what that means in a moment. Again, I have forgotten to write the verse down. Anything in chapter 4 I forgot to write down as far as what verse number it is. Stones.
9.
From land to Jordan. And verse, that was verse 9. Thank you. I appreciate those of you who are helping me. Even those who are not. That's, I still appreciate. So he puts stones from the land to the Jordan. What is it about a river in particular, actually, this river in particular, that makes it so unique in this area? Now, many rivers serve this purpose. Jordan happens to be one of them that's serving the same purpose. It's called a border. Border of a territory. Those who are on one side of the border is one nation. Those who are on the other side of the border is a different nation. It's quite common. We, the United States, do all the time, borders of our states or our natural, we use natural things as borders. So, does the border belong to anyone?
Not really.
No, it doesn't.
It does now.
Not yet. Not quite. This border doesn't actually have a possession, per se. It doesn't have someone who owns it. Israel does not own the Jordan. Today, it does not. The nation of Jordan does not own the Jordan River. It doesn't. It's a border. It's a shared border. It's a place with no home. So it's from land, so it has no home. What is Israel at this point, just before they cross over? They are a nation with no home. So what is it? What's the symbolism? What's Joshua doing here? Now, God didn't command this, but it stands as a symbol to us in our own eyes. The people of the Canaanite territories are going to be uprooted and cast out to a place where there is no home. They don't have a nation of their own anymore. The people of Israel who had no home are going to be uprooted and brought into what is now Israel. It's a swap. They're changing people. That's what it's symbolic of. There's another thing it's symbolic of, which this is from a Jewish commentary, which those of you who are... Yes, you had a thought, Ellie. You obviously, your face expressed it.
When Ephraim returns and gets the land of Ephraim, all of the people in Ephraim are going to be displaced.
That is a great way of viewing it. Now, granted, we're talking about all of Israel, but yes, that is true. When Ephraim returns, which is a portion of Israel, the people who are currently there do get displaced.
It's called
West End. We'll go into politics beyond that, thank you. What else is this symbolic of? Now, this is, now, you, the people who are seeing this event are not the Canaanites. Meaning, they saw the water, but they're not seeing the stone swapping. Who's seeing the stone swapping? The people of Israel. Israel sees it. So what did a message to them for? Keep in mind, oh, we haven't read that yet, but we're going to. In Deuteronomy, Moses gives the commandment, by the way, to do all of this. These guys aren't just arbitrarily doing it because they felt like it. Moses commanded them to do this with the exception of bringing the stones back into the water, which was pretty much all Joshua. Well, you know, I'll give him some leeway. Obviously, God did. The people of Israel are seeing this. And what does it mean to them? I'm going to project out here just a second. If the land or God can expel someone from the land and cast them out to its borders, vomit them out is another way of wording it. This is how the Bible words it. What's preventing him from doing the same thing to them? Nothing. 12 stones. They can be cast out just as easily as the Canaanites can. It's a warning. And guess what happened? It's also a prediction of their future. It did happen. They were cast out. That's a, I'll just write down warning. / prophecy. I couldn't spell prophecy if I left another. Anyway. So these are all symbols of the Messiah. You see, you get the whole point here? This is a very fascinating two chapters. They're really interesting to me, at least. I find them fascinating. To look at all these different symbols, and then as it was an important event, but a lot of these symbols are just glossed over. We don't see all of them. Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, there's probably a good reason why they get glossed over, because probably to some people they don't make sense. Because I was just looking at the New International Version, verse 9, says it quite differently.
How does it word it?
It says, Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests had, who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they were there to this day. Meaning they basically they did the same thing.
That's too bad. It's a poor translation.
Yeah.
So unfortunately.
Instead of a stone swap, it was like he did the same thing.
He did, yeah, that would be a reversal of what was just commanded him right. to do, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It was, in fact, a stone swap, by the way. The Hebrew spells it very clearly, it was a stone swap. At least the one version of the Bible, the English Bible I have, indicates it is a stone swapping, because it points out that he pulled them from the land,
right.
which is Eretz.
Well, yeah, the
water is not Eretz. Land is, yes.
Yeah, the New American Standard does have that rendering
correct.
That it was a stone swap.
A stone swap.
Which is
what? Kudos to Tammy. It was her translation. She was excited. Yeah, that's too bad. Unfortunately, I wish that was not poorly mistranslated.
And that Bible...
But it's going to happen periodically.
It's a popular Bible.
Yeah, that's too bad.
It's probably the most popular Bible.
Yeah.
In America right now.
In America at least, yes. So.
Well, that's going to happen. There's actually another translation that shows up even in the King James that is very poorly mistranslated, showing up in the book of Samuel, which we won't go to today, obviously, but it's very poorly mistranslated. Anyways, so one drawback why it's glossed over because they don't actually can read it. All right. So let's see. What's the reason for this that is given, these stone swaps?
As a memorial to the event and to show their children posterity as a reminder.
Exactly, as a reminder. It's a memorial to the event. Why?
Warning.
It is a warning.
Teaching.
Teaching, that's a great reason too.
Know the hand of the Lord that it is mighty and that you may fear the Lord your God forever.
Oh, yes, verse 24. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet, but okay. It is a warning, as we mentioned, as she just mentioned, and it's a memorial. What's the big deal about it? Well, why do they need a memorial? It happened. They recorded it down.
It's verse 24 in my Bible. I don't know what translation this is, but he said he did this, I think referring to God. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, so
right.
That you might always fear the Lord your God.
Right. It's what Ellie had just read as well in her translation. That's true. So all the peoples of the earth... Of Eretz.
Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land.
It's Eretz, actually. It's the land of Israel. It's Eretz. It's not planet Earth. It's the land. So everybody who's in the land knows. Everybody who's in the promised land knows. Every one of us who are going to God's promised land, the kingdom of God, know. What's our memorial? This was theirs. What's ours? We're the children, by the way. We're not the people who actually got to walk through the land. So this is a memorial to the children. So we're these children, and we're seeing our memorial. What is it?
Well, we were talking earlier about Christ being the symbolism of Christ, as
yes.
We are. And the 12 stones, the disciples.
The 12 stones being the disciples.
Right.
That's the key. That is our memorial. That's our reminder that this event happened to the Messiah. Just like that was the memorial, the reminder to the children of Israel in the land. The disciples, or decibels, is the reminder to us that this happened. We didn't get to see the Messiah rise.
Right.
None of us got to see it. We're taking this strictly by the word of what guys wrote down. How many years ago?
About
2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
We're taking their word for it.
And by the Spirit also.
Well, the Spirit inside of us isn't a memorial, though.
No.
This is the memorial we're talking about. We're talking physical object lessons, which is what pretty much the whole Bible is about, or object lessons. Yes, Richard?
Concept, remember, about in Hebrew, the word for memorial? Means like what you've spoken. Every memorial, if you go to Washington, D.C., there's a memorial, and it speaks to you about some event. It's talking to you, although it doesn't use words. It's telling you a story, it doesn't use words. So it basically was what. Now we have the apostles, they actually use words, and we should be able to hear them, but we can't hear their voice, but we hear their word, written word.
The advantage of our memorial happens to be in a written book that we all have access to. I'd have brought this up. Yes, Jeff.
Well, and building on what Richard said, written memorials are always important. Because if you were to go to the Washington Memorial or the Lincoln Memorial or Gettysburg or whatever, you can go to Gettysburg and go, okay, something happened here. What happened? Well, you might ask somebody, the tour guide there, maybe he knows. Maybe he doesn't know. How do you know what happens? So you need somebody to give you information about something that happened.
Which is
you can be at the place that something happened
and have no knowledge,
any idea. Like what happened later in among the kingdoms of Judah and Israel is that you'd have the temple. Well, the temple should be a memorial, but if there was a time when they actually lost the copies of the law, so they had no idea about Joshua and this and that and the other. So they had no idea what that building was for, and so they were putting up their own gods and stuff in there because they kind of came up with their own story of what happened.
Which is the reason why the Bible points out, this isn't just a memorial to look at, it's whether you tell your children when they ask. It is a verbal. There is required there for verbal, else it's just a bunch of rocks. Doesn't mean a whole lot. I've got to wrap this up. There is a working theory, which I can't give credence to just yet, that these rocks were temporarily at Gilgal, which is where their campsite is, that they're going to use them again a few chapters from now, regarding the blessing and the cursing, which is spoken of Deuteronomy, that Joshua actually fulfills later. It's argued that the case. I can't say yes or no. These are the same rocks. It's possible that they are the same rocks because the commandment of Deuteronomy says they're supposed to be similar. Yes,
hey,
Ellie.
There's a lot of rocks over there.
Yes, there are a lot of rocks over there.
And they want you to take some with you
yes.
when you go.
No doubt. I've got to wrap this up. I hope this was beneficial for those of you who... It was just interesting. I find it fascinating to look through. This whole thing points to the Messiah because... That's the whole point. That's why God has Joshua's story written down so we can see it and view it and what actually is supposed to happen to us. Now, it happens to be, 2,000 years old for memorial to us. Not this event, but the Messiah's event was. This event happened to be an extra, 1,300 years earlier? But we won't talk about that in too much detail. I hope that was beneficial for those of you who were here. And may God bless each of you.